Debate the Bait on Frederick's News Radio 930 WFMD. I'm your host and moderator, Troy Skinner. The show is brought to us by Putman Plumbing and Heating. How can we make you smile? And as I record this edition of the show, John Schweitzer is still on his missions trip in Israel, doing good work over there. And so, again, if you've been listening the last few weeks, I've been catching up on backlog emails. Everybody's so nice to send me the emails, and every once in a while I have an opportunity to share them on the show. I also try to share them on the website, so go to the website and check those out as well. But I need to catch up on these. It's just I'm getting a backlog of emails, and I really appreciate them. And most of them are thought-provoking, and a lot of them are really good and inspirational as well. So we're going to share some of those and dive right in. Email number one for today. This one is slug-lined Paul Harvey. It says, we can't give up on this issue. Paul Harvey in prayer. In God we trust. Paul Harvey says. Now, by the way, just because the email says it's from Paul Harvey doesn't mean it really is. Keep that in mind. There's no way to know for sure. Well, I guess we could ask Paul Harvey, but he's not here. I don't believe in Santa Claus, but I'm not going to sue somebody for singing ho, ho, ho in December. I don't agree with Darwin, but I didn't go out and hire a lawyer when my high school teacher taught his theory of evolution. Life, liberty, or your pursuit of happiness will not be endangered because someone says a 30-second prayer before a football game. So what's the big deal? It's not like somebody is up there reading the entire book of Acts. They're just talking to a God they believe in and asking him to grant safety to the players on the field and the fans going home from the game. But it's a Christian prayer, some will argue. Yes, and this is the United States of America, a country founded on Christian principles. According to our very own phone book, Christian churches outnumber all others better than 200-1. So what would you expect? Someone chanting Hare Krishna? If I went to a football game in Jerusalem, I would expect to hear a Jewish prayer. If I went to a soccer game in Baghdad, I would expect to hear a Muslim prayer. If I went to a ping pong match in China, I would expect to hear someone pray to Buddha. And I wouldn't be offended. It wouldn't bother me one bit. When in Rome. But what about the atheists? That's another argument. What about them? Nobody is asking them to be baptized. We're not going to pass the collection plate. Just humor us for 30 seconds. If that's asking too much, bring a Walkman or a pair of earplugs. Go to the bathroom. Visit the concession stand. Call your lawyer. Unfortunately, one or two will make that call. One or two will tell thousands that they can, what they can and cannot do. I don't think a short prayer at a football game is going to shake the world's foundations. Christians are just sick and tired of turning the other cheek while our courts strip us of all our rights. Our parents and grandparents taught us to pray before eating, to pray before we go to sleep. Our Bible tells us to pray without ceasing. Now a handful of people and their lawyers are telling us to cease praying. God help us. And if that last sentence offends you, well, just sue me. The silent majority has been silent too long. It's time we let that one or two who scream loud enough to be heard, that the vast majority don't care what they want. It is time the majority rules. By the way, I'm going to take a pause from the email. Be careful, Christians. We happen to live in a country that is predominantly professing Christian, but what about some of those other places that were mentioned in this email? What about Baghdad? You know, what about in China? You know, where Christianity is not the majority. Do we really want a society where it's majority rules? Anyway, back to the email. It's time we tell them, you don't have to pray, you don't have to say the Pledge of Allegiance, you don't have to believe in God or attend services that honor him. That's your right, and we'll honor your right. But by golly, you are no longer going to take our rights away. We are fighting back, and we will win. God bless us one and all, especially those who denounce him. God bless America. Despite all her faults, she is still the greatest nation of all. God bless our servicemen who are fighting to protect our right to pray and worship God. You know, I want to take another aside here real quick from this email. There's only a short few little lines left anyway, but this idea about we will win. Well, if we're on God's side, I suppose, God will win. So as long as we're on that side, I guess we will share in the victory. And by the way, from a Christian point of view, God has already won. You know, read Revelation. We know the end. God wins. And the other thing, God bless us one and all, especially those who denounce him. That is a nice prayer, a nice wish, and we should love our enemies, and we should ask God to do a work in the hearts of those who are denouncing him and that sort of thing. But in the end, remember, God wins. Those who continue to denounce God without repentance will not end up being blessed. At least that's what the Bible teaches, as I understand it. Back to the email. So may this year be the year the silent majority is heard and we put God back as the foundation of our families and institutions. Keep looking up. In God we trust. If you agree with this, please pass it on. If not, delete it. Hey, no guilt there. I like that. If you agree, pass it on. If you don't, delete it. I can live with that. Although there's an implicit guilt, right, that if you delete it, you must not agree with it. So maybe I'm not as okay with it as I thought. Here's an email, an insight of the day. Another Mother's Son by Mary G. Lodge, as told to Laura Lagana. Hope I'm getting those names right. I apologize if I'm not. When my beloved 18-year-old son was murdered in 1996, I thought my life was over. When it finally sunk in that this vivacious child of mine was dead, I felt as if I were having a heart attack from head to toe. I was numb. In order to survive this twisted nightmare, I moved to a different level of consciousness. During the trial, I wasn't allowed to speak to Robbie's murderer. On the day of the hearing, I got my first glimpse of Sean. He stared at the floor as they led him into the dimly lit courtroom. Shadows masked his face, distorting his features, giving him a grotesque, fiendish appearance. Although it was my decision not to take the stand, I made it clear to the judge that I wanted to speak with this evil perpetrator after his sentencing. At the conclusion of the arduous proceedings, the judge summoned me to his chambers. Filled with rage and hatred, I followed the bailiff into a small paneled office. My heart beat faster with each step as I prepared to meet the young man who took my son's life. Sean stood in the corner, head down, crying like a baby. His hands and feet shackled. This trembling, pitiful 20-year-old wore little more than baggy orange prison garb. As I watched this boy, so forlorn, no parents, no friends, no support, all I saw was another mother's son. Suddenly I found myself asking, "Can I give you a hug, Sean?" He looked up, revealing a childlike face stained with tears, and nodded in consent. The bailiff motioned me toward this prisoner. I walked over and put my arms around him. "I forgive you for this horrible thing you've done. I will pray for you every day that you're in prison. I would rather my Robbie be where he is than where you're going." Our eyes connected for a few moments, and then the bailiff escorted me from the room. Sean received a 20 to 40 year sentence. How do you compare that to the life of my son? No sentence could bring Robbie back. I still wonder what made Sean commit this crime. He has given me several explanations, but I still don't have an answer. He has been in prison for 5 years now, and so far, I'm his only visitor. Sean's sentencing has given me no satisfaction, but I believe the compassion I felt in the judge's chamber that day was a gift from God. Because of the abrupt changes in my life, I'm now part of a prison ministry. I know I could not heal the deep, dark places of hatred and revenge embedded within my heart and soul had I not forgiven my son's murderer. Forgiveness has set me free. Hatred and revenge won't bring back my beloved son, Robbie. But Sean is someone's son, too. That hatred has to stop somewhere. What better place to begin than with me? Mary Lodge is the mother of 5 children, 11 grandchildren, 4 great-grandchildren, and says that she is a Stephen minister in her church. I'm not sure what that means. I'll have to learn what that means. And enjoys speaking on the subject of forgiveness. Anyway, that's pretty powerful. Obviously, she forgave him, but she was still battling rage and hatred, and she was working that out in the prison ministry. Sounds like a pretty healthy approach to me. You know, the interesting thing there is she went in there ready to give him a what for. You know, let me give you what's on my mind, you dirty, rotten son of a gun, you. And then she saw that he had a contrite and repentant heart. He was really broken up. At least that's how she read it. Maybe he was broken up at his sentencing. I don't know. But the way I understand what is trying to be conveyed in that email story there is she saw in him a real sense of regret and repentance. And so she is able to forgive him. When we repent, forgiveness follows. There might be a message in that somewhere, seems to me. Here's an email. It says, I thought you'd enjoy this and appreciate this. I sure did. All right. The irrational commitment, or why did Wizard Academy build a free wedding chapel? Irrational commitment is a powerful thing. It's the stuff of heroes. Legends live because of it. And like anything powerful, it can be turned toward darkness. But let us look toward the light. Francis Bacon, who lived in from 1561 to 1626, made a fascinating observation during the days of Cervantes, who lived around that same period of time. Philosophy is based on reason and is, therefore, rational. Faith is based on revelation and is, therefore, irrational. Consequently, the greater the impossibility of the thing you believe, the greater the honor to God. I'm going to comment on that in just a second, I think. Faith is an irrational commitment of the heart, the pattern-recognizing right brain, not the deductive reasoning left. In Cervantes' book Don Quixote de la Mancha, our hero makes an irrational commitment to a common village girl who doesn't even know he exists. To the rest of us, there's nothing special about Eldonza Lorenzo, but in the mind of Quixote, she embodies everything that is good and right and true. He sees in her a princess and calls her his Lady Dulcinea. My Spanish isn't what it should be. Quixote's irrational commitment to Dulcinea gives him vision and focus and purpose. Do you make your commitments in your rational mind or in your irrational heart? Quixote makes himself a fool for Dulcinea and in her name accomplishes many impossible things. Doing the impossible is easy when you're utterly committed and have pushed aside your logical mind. I'm definitely going to have comments on this. Here's an example of an irrational commitment made by 56 men 230 years ago. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Lady Liberty was their Dulcinea. Here's another irrational commitment. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. America is a lady, not a place, and many have given their lives for her honor. But here, I believe, is the best irrational commitment of them all. For better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish till death do us part. In case I haven't made it clear, I am in favor of irrational commitment. It is not good to be alone. On June 7th, 1947, Paul Compton made an irrational commitment to Gene Johnson, and in later years he would be called to deliver on his promise. Alzheimer's disease stole Jean from Paul, but left her frail body in his care. Strengthened only by the memory of their years together, Paul faced the never-ending job of caring for her empty shell 24 hours a day, and he did it without complaint for 20 years. I've never known a better man. Paul and Jean had four daughters, all of whom work shoulder to shoulder with their husbands and have done so for more than 30 years. Miraculously, each of the girls is still married to her first husband, though none of those husbands is a prize. Trust me, I know them all. I'm the 18-year-old boy with no money and no future who married the youngest daughter. If you would taste truth and beauty and grace, you must reach for the fruit of a tree planted deep in the soil of irrational commitment. I wish you good fortune on your journey, Roy H. Williams. Well written, but wrong, I must say. I'm familiar with Roy Williams. He's a brilliant ad man, actually. He writes incredible ad copy. He's written some great books on advertising, a great public speaker. Very clever, very bright. We are not asked to make an irrational commitment. What's irrational? Irrationable? I made a word. What's irrationable? I did it again. Twice I said the word wrong. Let me try one third time, see if it's a charm. What's irrational about committing your life to someone until death? What's irrational about that? What's irrational about standing up for liberty? Sounds logical and rational to me. What's irrational? Man, why I keep saying it that way? Irrational. Irrational, irrational, irrational. What's irrational about faith and belief in God. That is a great lie. It is a great absolute lie that faith is irrational. Cervantes, Bacon, whoever it was that said that, they're wrong. They're wrong. The greater the impossibility of the thing you believe, the greater the honor to God. Well, you know what? I would say from a Christian point of view that the greatest impossibility is that God doesn't exist. So I'm going to read this quote again. The greater the impossibility of the thing you believe, the greater the honor to God. And I hold that the greatest impossibility is that God doesn't exist. By holding to that impossibility and the greatness of it, is that honoring God in any way, shape, or form? You know, I've read my share of philosophy, and I continue to read it and study it and try to understand, you know, where people are coming from. Just because a philosopher says it doesn't mean it's true. I don't care how famous they are. They don't know what God knows. Yes, philosophers, heck, even myself, has been known to be wrong once, I think. Although, I think I was mistaken about having been mistaken. But anyway, as the joke goes, ba-dum-bump. There is a leap of faith. We are saved by faith. The Christian Bible teaches that people are saved by faith. There is no doubt about that. But nowhere does it say it's an irrational faith. At least nowhere that I've found. If you know otherwise, email me, troy@wfmd.com. Maybe I can still learn a thing or two in my growing years here, my old age. You're listening to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio, 930 WFMD. I'm Troy Skinner. We're catching up on emails that fine folks have sent to me. Now, here's one. It looks like parts of it got cut off, so let's see if we can make heads or tails of this. I'm going to try my best. The headline is The Rope. All right, The Rope. Story tells about a mountain climber who wanted to climb the highest mountain. He began his adventure after many years of preparation, but since he wanted the glory for just himself, he decided to climb the mountain alone. The night felt heavy in the heights of the mountain, and the man couldn't see anything. All was black, zero visibility, and the moon and the stars were covered by the clouds. As he was climbing only a few feet away from the top of the mountain, he slipped and fell into the air, falling at a great speed. The climber could only see black spots as he went down, and the terrible sensation of being sucked down by gravity. He kept falling, and in those moments of great fear, it came to his mind all the good and bad episodes of his life. He was thinking now about how close to death he was getting, and when all of a sudden he felt the rope tied to his waist pull him up very hard. His body was hanging in the air. Only the rope was holding him. And in that moment of stillness, he had no other choice but to scream, "Help me, God!" All of a sudden, a deep voice coming from the sky answered, "What do you want me to do?" That wasn't a very good God voice, was it? "Save me, God!" the climber said. "Do you really think I can save you?" "Of course I believe you can." Turn the page. The rescue team tells that the next day a climber was found dead and frozen, his body hanging from a rope. Oh, you know what? There's a piece missing here, and I know what piece is missing. I knew there was a piece missing, and I know how this story's supposed to go. All right, says, "Do you really believe I can save you?" And the guy says, "Of course I believe you can." And so then God tells the guy, "Then let go of the rope. Cut the rope." And the guy says, "I can't do it." And God says, "If you believe I can save you, cut the rope." And then the story continues. The rescue team tells the next day a climber was found dead and frozen, his body hanging from a rope, his hand still holding tight to it, only 10 feet away from the ground. And you, the email continues, how attached are you to your rope? Will you let go? Don't ever doubt the things from God. You never should say that he has forgotten or abandoned you. Well, if you should say it, it wouldn't be true anyway. That's me. Opining here. Don't ever think that he does not take care of you. Remember that he is always holding you with his right hand, Isaiah 41. If this message was a blessing to you, share it with the ones you love. God bless you. See, now they didn't have to include that last part, because if I don't share it with the ones I love, then that means I'm saying it wasn't a blessing to me. What are they saying? What do they mean by that? A little sensitive, aren't I? Here's an email that has a slug line. We're going to be rich. Oh, I already know what this is going to be. It's one of those get-rich-quick schemes. All right, here we go. Sorry, I couldn't take a chance on not sending this. Laugh out loud. Actually, it says LOL, but I've learned that that means laugh out loud. Money Angel. This is a Money Angel. Pass it on to 6 of your good friends or family and be rich in 4 days. Pass it to 12 of your friends or family and be rich in 2 days. I'm not joking. You will find an unexpected windfall. If you delete it, you will beg. Trust me. Please. Why? By the way, I know the person who sent me. Yeah, I know the person who sent this to me, and I know that she sent it to the 12 people. She's not rich. She's not a pauper. But, well, let me put it this way. If she's rich, she was already rich. She's no richer than she was. I mean, I understand the argument. Anybody who lives in America, I mean, the practically the poorest among us in America are among the richest in the world. So maybe she is rich. But she's no richer now than she was before she sent that email. Don't send those silly, superstitious emails. Unbelievable. All right. Here's some light stuff. I think it's light stuff. It's got cartoon pictures on it, so hopefully it's light. Words to live by. Tweety Bird's advice. Anger is a condition in which the tongue works faster than the mind. It's almost like Proverbs here, huh? You can't change the past, but you can ruin the present by worrying over the future. These are like Proverbs. God always gives his best to those who leave the choice with him. A hug is a great gift. One size fits all. It can be given for any occasion, and it's easy to exchange. Oh, isn't that nice? Laughter is God's sunshine. Take time to laugh, for it is the music of the soul. If anyone speaks badly of you, live so that none will believe it. Oh, isn't that good advice, boy? Do what you can for who you can with what you have and where you are. Wishing your day be filled with love and peace. Let's see, is there more? Is that the end of it? Oh, there's one more page. Dear Lord, so far today I'm doing all right. I have not gossiped, lost my temper, been greedy, grumpy, nasty, selfish, or self-indulgent. I have not whined, complained, cursed, or eaten any chocolate. I have charged nothing on my credit card. But I will be getting out of bed in a minute, and I think that I will really need your help then. Live life one day at a time, but live it. Yeah, that's very good. I like that. All right, let me end with, what do I have that's quick? Do I have anything quick? Looking for a really quick, short email, because I don't have time for a long one. No time for any of these. These all look too long. Well, here's one. Okay, here's something. This is actually not an... Is this an email? This is an AP story. An AP story. Episcopal delegates reject moratorium on gay bishops, it says. I'm not sure why this is mixed in with my emails, but let's read it together. Episcopal clergy and lay delegates have rejected a demand from fellow Anglicans that they temporarily stop electing gay bishops. There's little chance now that the proposal can be revived at the church's general convention. Anglican leaders, angered by the 2003 consecration of an openly gay Episcopal bishop, had asked the Episcopalians pass a moratorium, at least for now, on homosexuals leading dioceses. But in a complex balloting system, a majority of the Episcopal House of Deputies voted against the measure, which church leaders had seen as critical to keeping the Anglican community together. The Episcopal debate came as another denomination, the Presbyterian Church USA, is trying to decide whether to allow leeway on the ordination of gay clergy and lay elders and deacons. Yeah, if you haven't heard, this is a story that's been raging now in the Episcopalian Church for about, I don't know, it's got to be about 2 years now. And it's really sad to see what's happening there. It's dividing a church. Now we've got one end of the church suing the other end of the church, and it's a disaster. I will say that I agree that with the conservative wing, that the unrepentant, openly homosexual men, and I guess women, who are looking to be in the pastorate in their church don't have really strong scriptural grounds to make their case, it seems to me. But I also got to say that those who are breaking away from the Episcopal Church, because of this and are suing to keep their grounds and their church buildings. You know what? I don't think you have scriptural support for that either. You know? So I think both sides are wrong. One wrong has led to another wrong. It's just really ugly, and it can be discouraging if we focus on the behavior of Christians. We just have to remind ourselves as Christians that our faith isn't about the believers. Our faith is about the one in whom we believe. So anyway, I want to thank you for listening. Thank you to our sponsor, Putman Fleming and Heating. How can we make you smile? I'm Troy Skinner. You can email me at troy@wfmd.com. I encourage you to visit our website, wfmd.com, and go to the Faith Debate page and check out our daily blog there, and links to all sorts of what I think to be helpful and fascinating places to go on the web. Thanks so much. God bless.